You know, owls are some of the most well-known and beloved birds in the raptor world, and Wisconsin is home to several owl species, and there are lots of people out that are working really, really hard out there to help protect them. I'm Jill Najoe, and this is the Larry Mueller Show. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Today, we're going to be checking in on with the International Owl Center, and Carla Bloom is back with us. She's the executive director of the center. It's based in Houston, Minnesota. What kinds of owls do you have in your area? Have you heard some noises? You're not quite sure what they are. Or tell us about the last time you saw one. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send us an email, ideas@wpr.org. Carla, thank you so much for being back with us.
Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. It's been too long. Last time we visited, we actually heard one of your owls in the background. So are you in an owl room at the moment?
I'm not right now, but okay. I could be if you want to hear Alice Hoot again.
Well, we might ask you to do that. owl calls are just so wonderful. So for those who haven't heard us talk to you before, tell us what the International Owl Center is all about.
Okay, the International Owl Center is the only all-owl education center in the United States. So our primary focus is on education with sort of a secondary focus on research and trying to engage the public when we can in research. So we do kind of our bread and butter is we have a small facility right now working on building what we should have, a full facility in a park at the edge of town. With several live owls there. We do programs every day that we're open to the public. We also do special group programs. And then our big event of the year is we do an international festival of owls the first weekend in March every year.
Yeah, very exciting. And I hear you've got a brand new barred owl ambassador at the center. Tell us about him.
Yes. So our new barred owl is not working yet. We're working on getting him ready to go to work.
Okay.
We named him Pierce, which
Cute.
Is sort of a dark humor attempt at why he's in captivity. He's over by Toma. He fell out of his nest this spring when he was a little guy, was found on the ground in somebody's backyard with a giant hole in his wing.
Oh.
Hence the name Pierce. And also eye issues. So he went to the rehab facility in La Crosse. And they did what they could for him and realized that hole was never going to completely close and he was going to have some permanent vision issues. So they contacted us and asked if we would be willing to take him on as an education bird. We didn't really have to had room at the time, but we had to do some shuffling around and were able to make some space for him. But because he's a wild injured bird, and he's had all this handling around his treatment and whatever, there's more to get him used to and transitioned rather than like a captive reared bird that we got before it could fly. Then they're just ready to go right away.
Sure, that makes total sense. And are most of the birds that you have, were they raised in captivity or are they birds that couldn't be released in the wild?
We have a mixture. So we've gotten three non-releasables from the Raptor Education Group up in Anago and one at Pierce now from La Crosse. And then we have four other ones that were hatched in captivity for various reasons.
Can you tell us what kind of owls that call Wisconsin and Minnesota home?
Sure. The main ones that get encountered are typically great horned owls. So they're the big ones with ear tufts that do that low, mellow hooting, hoo, 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 and the female a little higher, a few extra notes, but faster. So hoo, 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 hoo. If you're in a heavily wooded area, barred owls, B-A-R-R-E-D, like our Pierce, and they're the ones that say the who cooks for you. So it's ooh, ooh. And then screech owls, we would also have, unless you're in the farther north, and they do a whinny and a trill. So it sounds like a little horse up in a tree, kind of a. They also do a trill like they put in the background of scary movies. That's kind of a. I'm not as good at that one.
Sounded pretty good to me.
Yeah. And then in the northern parts of the range, certainly saw-whet owls, and they sound like a truck backing up in the middle of the night in the woods. So if I can whistle decent, it's a... There also can be long-eared owls in the northern parts and in some of the southern parts, especially in the fall and winter. Short-eared owls in more grassy areas in the winter, snowy owls come in. Barn owls are starting to show up in the area, B-A-R-N, and they do a hideous shriek that has the voice quality of a fan belt going out on a car, so it's kind of a that's often confused with juvenile great horned owl begging calls.
Because there are a lot of other calls besides those main ones that you just performed for us, aren't there?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every species has a pretty wide repertoire. So usually what we see online or on, you know, CDs or if you download something is usually those primary territorial calls. And those are the ones you're most likely to hear. Mm-hmm. But if you're around a breeding pair, if you've got them nesting near your yard, you're going to hear a whole lot of other sounds that you may not have heard recordings of.
And speaking of great horned owls, Vivian in Green Bay has a question for us. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I live in the city of Green Bay, which, of course, is on the Fox River. And thanks to a large city park adjacent to a large cemetery with some very large old trees, we have had great horned owls in the area for years. I've noticed that bald eagles are moving into this area. And, of course, owls are nocturnal, but how will these two coexist regarding nesting and prey?
Usually they're okay for the most part. Occasionally you get the barred owl or the great horned owls that try and steal the bald eagle nests. Sometimes the great horned owls will nest before the bald eagles, and then you can get some behavioral interactions. Because as you said, one is day shift, one is night shift, so mostly they kind of leave each other alone. And eagles tend to be more focused on fish and carrion, that kind of thing, and great horned owls are more other things that they're eating. So they're not too competitive other than when it comes to nest sites, and then it can be kind of anybody's game trying to commandeer a new nest site in the spring.
Okay, thank you, Vivian. Appreciate that call. If you have a question about owls, why don't you join us? 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email if you'd like. That's ideas@wpr.org. So, Carla, do we have endangered owls here in our area?
Well, the short-eared owl is a declining species. In Minnesota, the boreal is listed as a species of special concern. I'm not sure what the listing is in Wisconsin. They're getting harder to find, for sure. And then the barn owl is kind of like on the opposite end, where it's been considered extra limited in Minnesota. And Wisconsin used to have it listed, I think, at the threatened level, and now it's at special concern because they're like, you know, it's a little far north. They're not supposed to be here, but they are now increasing in numbers.
Hmm.
Kind of the reverse trend of what we've had normally.
Is that a lot to do with, you know, changing climate?
Good question. I don't think anybody knows what's going on.
Okay.
So they used to be more common up until the mid-60s, and then they kind of disappeared from much of the Midwest and the northeastern U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And then there's been all kinds of programs, to sometimes breeding and release programs, nest box programs, to try and increase their population. And now in the last few years, they have been increasing, but we're not 100% sure why. Habitat is probably a very key thing for them because they need open grasslands for hunting. And that used to be people's pastures. And farming has changed so much over the year that there's not much open pasture anymore. Most of that has been plowed up, and a lot of animals are in confinement situations now. So,
mm-hmm.
But then there's more people doing CRP, which can be beneficial for them also, and there's been more roadside programs for grassy and native plantings along there, so that could be helping also.
And CRP is?
Oh, Conservation Reserve Program.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
For farmers planting native vegetation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great programs. I know we have quite a few of those here in Wisconsin. We've got a question from Elizabeth in Madison. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have great horned owls in our neighborhood in the middle of the city in Madison. Which I love hearing them. However, I don't love hearing if they're crows or blackbirds or whatever, hassling them all the time I try to clap my hands really loud to make them go, the blackbirds or crows or whatever they are, go away. Or I even got a fake clay gun that makes a noise, and nothing seems to work. And I know they are natural enemies. I don't know. We just have to live with listening to them hassling the owl.
There's probably not much you can do, because as you said, they are natural enemies. Crows and most other birds are just hatched out hating owls. And so if you're a screech owl, you're going to get mobbed by things like chickadees, nuthatches, blue jays. And if you're a bigger one like a great horned owl, then crows are just a perennial issue. And sometimes the great horned owls just sit and wait them out, and sometimes they'll drive them away so the owls will fly away till they finally can find a place to get away from them. But occasionally the great horned owls will pluck off a crow in the process. So it's kind of, there's not really much we humans can do about it. They just kind of have to play out that dance between the two species.
And is that a because of territory? Is that why they want the owl out?
Not necessarily. I think it's because great horned owls eat them.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. So if they gang up on them, they have a better chance.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, that makes sense too. So what are owls doing about this time of the year?
Oh, fall is when you start thinking about nesting season. So they're nest shopping. Great horned owls and other owls don't build their own nest. So the owls that are resident on territory year-round, so things like barred owls, great horned owls, screech owls, they're paying attention to all the tree cavities. And great horned owls, we use stick nests and other things also. So they're kind of nest shopping and paying attention to where we can find a potential nest. And even if they've got one that they've used last year successfully, the females always like to have their options open so that they could pick a different thing if they would like. And they're doing a lot of calling, most of the species are, because the young ones are dispersing, so the adults are basically advertising, saying, this is our territory, it's taken, move along.
Ah, that's very interesting. Now, well, owls really do, they mate fairly early, they have their young early too, don't they?
It depends on the species.
Okay.
So a great horned owl is the one most of us are thinking about, and yes, they are probably the first, if not one of the first, owls that nest every year. So they can be laying eggs usually late January, early February, but it can be earlier than that also, but
okay.
Not usually, but it's usually end of February. And then some of the other ones, like screech owls, they're not laying eggs until maybe April or so, and then saw-whets would be even a little later than that because they're migratory.
Okay, great. Well, we're talking with Carla Bloom. She is the executive director of the International Owl Center, and it's based in Houston, Minnesota. What would you like to know about owls? Why don't you join our conversation? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or if you have a email you'd like to send us, it's ideas@WPR.org. But stay with us because we'll be back right after this look at the news. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We've got Carla Bloom with us today. She's the executive director of the International Owl Center, and it's based in Houston, Minnesota. What experiences have you had with owls? How do you live an owl-friendly life? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Carla, we're going to go right to the phones. We've got a question from Asma in Milwaukee. Hi, Asma. What's your question?
My question is that when there's an owl in the area, we have a myth that we tell the kids don't laugh, don't cry, because they mimic. Is that just a myth, or do owls mimic more children than adults?
Well, that's interesting. Carla, are you aware?
I have not heard that one before, but I can answer it definitively, though, because owls can't mimic. They are actually hardwired. All of their vocalizations are innate, so when they hatch out, they know what to do, and they're not capable of switching those up and learning other vocalizations. So I understand why people would think that, because some of the begging calls sure sound like that, but they can't learn to imitate a sound.
And it also is a good way to stop kids from crying. So
yes.
We know what we're doing. We did get a couple of emails, too. Steve emailed us, and he's wondering if there have been any confirmed sightings of great gray owls in northern Wisconsin, because he thinks that he may have seen one.
I'm not sure about this year, but it's certainly possible, because they move around, and it's where they go can be different from year to year. And some years we have big eruptions, so that's not like erupt like a volcano. It's I-R-R-U-P-T-I-O-N-S, and that's kind of irregular movements, usually in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've learned with owls is the words always and never don't really apply, because when you can say, like, we're farther south, so it'd be extremely unlikely to get a great gray owl this far south. But that being said, once every zillion times somebody says, oh, I'm pretty sure I saw a great gray owl, and they show us a picture, it's normally a barred owl.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a blue moon, it's a great gray. So getting a picture, the way to tell for sure, because so many times barred owls are confused for them, because they can look kind of gray, and they can look much larger than you think they are when they're up in the top of the tree. And I get it, because to me, they look huge when they're in the top of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Look at eye color. So in a great gray, the eye color is yellow. In a barred owl, it's brown. That's the key thing to look for, and bill color also. So check those things out, and if you have a photo, it's easy to go back and look. But I never say never. I can just say likely or unlikely.
Ah, you're very smart. You've learned.
Yes.
Carol in Beloit emailed us and wants to know, what are some things that she can do to encourage owls to come live in her yard? She lives in southern Wisconsin. It's a kind of a semi-rural area, she says.
Okay. Oh, excellent question. I always love this question. So things you can do to encourage them, mow less lawn. If you have like 5 acres of mowed lawn, that's not an encouraging thing for an owl, because you want to have the prey for them to eat. So if you can let areas go wild or landscape with native plants, that's fantastic for the kinds of things that owls eat. So that will attract them to your area. You can put up nest boxes. Make sure cats cats stay inside, because cats can catch and kill the small owls, like screech owls and saw-whet owls can get caught and killed by cats. I've dealt with both of those. But then on the flip side, if you have great horns around, it's not like they target pets, but they're just generalists. So if they're desperate and there happens to be a small cat around, they can go after that. So keeping cats inside is helpful for owls, and for cats for that matter. You can, based on what you've got in your area, you can do nest boxes for barred owls or screech owls. Or if you're in a grassland area, you could try barn owls also. Great horned owls are less likely to use an artificial nest structure. And again, don't say never, but in our area, it's less likely. If you're out west where there's hardly any trees, heck, you can put up anything and they'll be in it. But where we are, it's a little harder to get great horns to use nesting structures. So those are a few of the things that you can do to kind of attract them. But if they're not already somewhat in your area, it's not like they're going to come from far and wide and come to your area, because the majority of our species that you're going to get nesting in a yard or near a property are going to be species that are resident on territory year-round. So they're not doing large exploratory movements like a saw-whet owl or a long-eared owl would be doing.
Mm-hmm. I know that you can get like plans and things for other birdhouses online or wherever. Is that the same with owl houses?
Yes, we have links to a few of those on the Owl Center website, internationalowlcenter.org. And if you go in the DIY section, there's a section on nest boxes, and we have a few on there. Or if you go to Cornell's All About Birds, They usually have some nest box plants that you can get in there also.
Yeah, that's a great site for all kinds of things. So,
mm-hmm.
And I think we do have a link to your website on our website. So if you go to WPR.org/Larry, look for this show, and underneath you'll see related websites or related links, and you can get there real quick. But if you just Google, you'll find it too. So the World Owl Conference is coming to La Crosse later on this month. Now, that's the first time it's been hosted in the United States. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so these are kind of exciting. This is not geared for the general public. It's geared for scientists, and we definitely realize there are people in the general public who maybe are not owl researchers who are capable and interested in hearing scientific presentations. So they are welcome to come also. We definitely ask that everybody pre-registers, although we're getting very short timeline right now because it starts on October 23rd. We will be having, I think we've got just over 100 people registered coming in, researchers heavily from North America because that's where we are, but we do have folks coming in from Taiwan and Norway, Brazil. I think one fellow is from India, several other European countries, the Netherlands, Germany, Portugal. And then they'll be presenting, for the most part, 20-minute presentations about scientific research. I think we'll have about 9 posters and then 3 keynote presentations during the day. And one of the very popular things is we're having a featured banquet presentation by Denver Holt, the founder of the Owl Research Institute, on that Wednesday evening.
Oh, very neat.
Right. So a lot of people are coming just for the banquet.
Just,
well, it's
yeah.
too late to sign up for the banquet. I should mention that because the food already had to have been planned
sure.
for.
Sure, yeah. Don't get too excited. But
Yeah. But a lot of people are coming to that. There is one thing that people can still sign up for that's a little bit less scientific and really exciting. Author Jennifer Ackerman, who just this year came out with the book What an Owl Knows, which is an amazing overview of owls and all the latest research and going over all these overgeneralizations that have been repeated year after year and kind of clearing all that up. Amazing book, and she's an amazing person and speaker. She is going to be giving presentations at the Owl Center on the Friday of the conference, October 27th. And because there was so much interest and we have a limited size facility, we're moving the afternoon presentation to the elementary school so we can handle more people. So I think we have about 150 people signed up for that already. So you get to meet Jennifer in person, and that you can still sign up for.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, is there a link on your website for that too, or do we have to go to the World Owl Conference?
For that one, so it's, yeah, we're doing 2 different ones, so it's a little bit confusing. From mm-hmm. the Owl Conference website, it would be closed now as a workshop field trip
okay.
for the morning presentation, but the general public one you can register for on the Owl Center website.
Okay. All right. So get that cleared up. So are any of these going to be offered virtually?
The World Owl Conference, you can attend virtually, you can register for that on the World Owl Conference website, so you'll be able to watch it live, and then, assuming technology plays nicely, we will have it saved in the cloud for a month that you can watch it after the end of the conference.
Okay. Well, then that's open for a lot of other people. If you've got a question about the conference, about owls, about something you think you might have heard that was an owl, our lines are open, 800-642-1234. Of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So join in with that. Now, I understand that some of your center's research on owl vocalization is actually featured in that book, What an Owl Knows. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Jennifer's chapter on owl vocalizations is sort of heavy on the first part about the work that I've done with great horned owls, and specifically Alice the Great Horned Owl.
Uh-huh.
She's the owl that got everything started here in Houston, Minnesota. So she's a bird that I got as an education bird. She was a human imprint, and because she was the only bird I had when I started doing owl education, we developed this very close relationship. But she, as an imprint, expected me to respond as a male great horned owl, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh.
So I went to the scientific literature to try and figure out, well, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? And realized nobody had studied their vocalization. So back in 2004, I started working on figuring that out with Alice as a base, and then wild owls, and that expanded to a captive breeding pair, Rusty and Iris, who have live streamed on our YouTube channel for many years. Rusty has since passed away, but Iris is still live on our YouTube channel. And going out banding with researchers in Saskatchewan and enlisting zillions of volunteers to help do observations at other great horned owl cams online, and just a huge amount of effort to look at great horned owl vocalizations from every possible angle to try and get their complete vocal repertoire, figure out, like, is there heritability of territorial hoot characteristics, individual vocal recognition, regional variation. There's just so much you can do with vocalizations.
Wow, no wonder you can do those vocalizations so well. Yeah, fascinating. Speaking of vocalizations, we've got Gary in Chippewa County who has a question about something that he heard. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I hear I'm thinking it's an owl at night, and the sound sounds like the bellow of like a fawn white-tailed deer, but it only lasts about 2 seconds. I hear three of them in the trees talking back to each other.
And is it repeated over and over and over and over again?
Correct. I mean, it just lasts 2 seconds, and then you hear it from a different tree, and then a little while later you hear it from a different tree.
So I would, my best guess, and this is just a guess, that it's juvenile owls and maybe great horned owls, because they're very vocal in the fall, and this time of year, and they do begging calls, basically saying, hey, here I am, feed me, bring me food. This time of year, the parents are trying to cut them off, so the kids get really insistent, and when they do, their vocalizations can sound significantly different than what we normally think of as a begging call. I mean, it can be high-pitched and ear-piercing and squealing. It can be more rough and broad spectrum. But if you're hearing three of them and they're moving around up in the trees, and if it's fall, that would be my suspicion, because they're very vocal, loud, obnoxious, and the vocal quality can sound different this time of year.
Okay, thanks for the call, Gary. If you've got a question, our lines again are there open, 800-642-1234. Give us a call and we can answer some of your questions. So you're talking about your YouTube channel. Is that on your website? Can we take a look at it there, or how do we get there?
Should be able to get to it from our website, or if you go to YouTube and just type in Iris the Great Horned Owl or International Owl Center, you'll find it that way. So Iris is a widow now, so she's there by herself, but we have a nice crew of chat room moderators that love to answer all kinds of questions about great horned owls and vocalizations and what's going on in the history of Rusty and Iris and the young ones that they've had. So it's a great place to go and check out. And plus, you can hear the wild owls in the area and some of our other captive owls. So even though it's a great horned owl YouTube channel with Iris, her next-door neighbor is a Eurasian eagle owl, and when Uhu the eagle owl gets calling with her "ooh" calls, then Pierce, our barred owl, sometimes does his little screechy. His voice isn't fully mature yet, so he's still in the teenage boy voice-breaking thing, so he'll do a "ooh" with some squeals to it because he's not mature yet. So you can hear, and then JR, our screech owl, is singing a lot, so you hear a whole bunch of his trills in there, and you can hear Alice hooting out there. So there's quite a bit of vocalizations going on there.
Wow, that's amazing. It would be fun just to kind of listen while you're doing other stuff, Sue. So.
It is. And some people do that. They'll just have it on in the background to listen.
Yeah, very cool. So tell us about your plans for this new Owl Center that you've been hoping to build.
Oh, yeah. So when people come and visit the Owl Center, they expect us to have a great big facility on the edge of town in a park. And that's what we should have. But to get started, that wasn't a feasible way to get started because it takes millions of dollars to build something like that. We exist currently in an old brick department store in the middle of town. So all of our owls live out in the country and have to commute to work. And anyway, we have to kind of stand on our heads sometimes to make it work. It's But what we're working on is what we should have, and it will be amazing. So we'll have about a 22,000 square foot facility that includes aviaries for all of our program birds, the ones that we handle on the glove for programs both on-site, off-site, and as well as online programs. And then they'll have a lot more downtime instead of being in front of the public so much, which will be great for them. Then we will have separate display-only birds. So these are birds that we don't handle, except for health checks and stuff. They just live in large aviaries, so you can just view them, and they get to live in these big spacious spaces on site with natural vegetation in there. And some of those will be two-part aviaries, where part is climate-controlled and part is not. So if you're a snowy owl, then it's hot in summer, and you can decide, well, do I want to be in the air conditioning, or, hey, it's a little bit cooler day, or I want to go sit in the sun for a bit, you can do that also. Or if you're a tropical owl, like a spectacled owl, and it's winter, oh, you probably want to be in the heated part, but maybe there's a nice sunny day in the winter and you want to sit outside, you have that choice. And the public can see them whichever part of the aviary they're in. And then the feature that we want to have is walk-through aviaries down in the park, where you literally walk through the side of the aviary and there's a viewing window where there's nothing between you and the owls. And this is a design that was pioneered in the Bavarian National Forest in Germany by Wolfgang Schertzinger, and he's consulting with us on the design of these. And there's a few zoos in Europe that have copied that idea, but to my knowledge, nobody in the U.S. has done that with owls before. So the design is, every last detail is critical because it's based on the owl's instincts so that the owls don't want to come where the people are. And they just naturally stay where they are so that you can view them with nothing between you and the owls that are just free in their habitat.
Wow, that's very thoughtful design. I love that. How far are you in the plans, and what can we do to help?
We are just about done with the concepts with our architect. Hopefully that'll be wrapping up within the next month or so. And then we'll be putting together like a video tour so that you have a better idea of what you would see as a visitor coming to the center. We're working with a fundraising firm now, just preparing for our capital campaign, and we'll start the silent phase of that this winter. And then when we get to a certain point, then we'll go public with that capital campaign. So donations are welcome.
Okay. Well, keep us informed, and we'll probably have you back again when you're ready to do that. Can tell us more how it's going. Right now we've got a caller, Sylvia in Appleton. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. I just want to thank your guest for the research that she was working on. People like me really appreciate that. I also would like to make people aware there is another owl research group. It's ORI, the Owl Research Institute in Charo, Montana. And they also have a place for where you can view cameras that have been on the owls and owl nests.
Yes, so Denver Holt, our keynote speaker at the banquet, is the founder of the Owl Research Institute. So they're focused just on research. So there's three all-owl places in North America. One is the Owl Research Institute, which focuses just on research. Our primary focus is education, and then the Owl Foundation in Vineland, Ontario, focuses just on rehab.
Great. Well, thank you, Sylvia. We really appreciate that information. And we had another shout-out for you from Christy. She emailed that she has had the pleasure of visiting the International Owl Center in Houston, Minnesota back in 2021, and that you're doing amazing work there. She learned so much that day and recommended everyone visit you. So,
oh, wonderful. Thanks.
Yeah. So even in your, you know, redone department store, you're still helping and educating people about owls.
Great. Good. Yeah. And I mean, even though it's a small space, we just cram everything we can in there. So we've got artwork from kids from all over the world from our International Owl Art Contest. This year we had over 2,000 entries from 34 different countries, and it's amazing what the kids do. We have mounted specimens of every owl species in North America except the whiskered screech owl, plus we also have a tawny owl from Europe. And those are almost all done by Roar Solheim, a Norwegian owl researcher who also is the senior curator at Agder Natural History Museum in Norway. So he is amazing what he can do with mounted owls. And then, of course, we have live owls on display in a gift shop that's very dangerous if you like owl things.
Owl, collectors or what have you tend to go up and down, don't they, as far as being popular? Because I know owls have been popular in the last couple of years, and they were popular back in the 70s. So,
yeah, yes, and we've gotten many donations of, you know, grandma's old owl collection, and some of those, we've gotten a couple collections that are absolutely amazing. So some of that have pieces from around the world that are really fancy. But but yeah, we have no shortage of owl items in the gift shop. It's pretty amazing. It's all owl. We don't have anything in the gift shop that's not owl.
Wow, that's great. And real quick, do you have a prediction of whether or not we're going to have snowy owls in the area this year?
Well, there's always snowy owls that go to the Minneapolis airport, and then how much farther south they go totally varies, and I don't think anybody totally understands it. I'm just always, well, we'll wait and see what happens. You can predict all you want, but owls will do whatever the heck they want to do they want to do it.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Carla, once again for being with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, you take care. We've been talking with Carla Bloom. She is the executive director of the International Owl Center based in Houston, Minnesota. Join us again tomorrow for Garden Talk. Mark Dwyer is going to be with us to talk about fall mums and ornamental grasses. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. Tomorrow is Thursday. But anyway, join us again. Home improvement. Thanks. Bye-bye.